Dear Great Pumpkin, I'm looking forward to your arrival on Halloween night.
Live on the Fireside app, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I know you can't see me right now, but I've got my Top Gun fighter pilot outfit on because it's Friday and I'm headed to the singles bar later. But, you know, it occurs to me Sunday's Halloween, which is awkward for me because I hate dressing up in ridiculous costumes. But here's an idea. Maybe I just won't shave my back for a few days and I'll take off my shirt and go as one of the moles on Joe's mom's back. Speaking of horror, our guest today will be talking about their financial horror stories. From Afford Anything, we have Paula Pant dressed like the clown from Stephen King's It. From this podcast, we welcome back OG, who's dressed suspiciously like a 40-something middle-class dad, which is his own personal nightmare. And from LenPenzo.com, it's a hideous corpse. Just kidding. That's only his costume. Oh, what? What's that, Len? You're not wearing a costume? Oh, that's embarrassing for you. And now, a guy who wakes up screaming from his recurring dream of a mega backdoor Roth IRA strategy gone wrong, it's Joe Saul Sehat.
I'm sure we've all had that dream, haven't we? The one you wake up just screaming all those lost taxes. Hey, everybody, welcome to Wake Up Crying podcast. I'm Joe Saul Sehat, Average Joe Money on Twitter. And we have the team with us today. Let's start with the guy who's normally across the table from me, but he's not across the table from me today. It's Mr. OG off on location. How are you, man?
I'm off on location. That's right. Is there music in the background?
There's spooky Halloween stuff. Listen to this.
Oh,
very scary.
Oh, very scary. I like that intro, Doug. A scary middle-class dad. That's pretty good. That's well thought out. So
scaring people since 1970 something.
I haven't thought about what to do for Halloween, but yep, we are in Vail today. Man, it's nice here. We just missed the peak, you know, fall color by probably about a week, but man, it's still nice and good to get away for a little bit, but duty calls. I tore myself away from the, fire pit and the hot chocolate and the s'mores.
Oh, that's so tough. Stop bragging so we can introduce Paula Pant, please.
So that I can. So that
Paula,
I can
cut him off. So somebody's.
Well, let's see. There's no fire. There's no s'mores. There's no gorgeous mountain. But you know, I'm looking at a gorgeous sunset while we record. So I'm feeling the spirit of fall, autumn. You know, the spooky leaves of Halloween.
That's your own flex. That's good. That's not quite a Vail flex like OG, but that's good.
The flex being what? That I have eyesight?
I didn't even say Vail. I said the mountains.
You did say Vail.
So fine. We're at the...
Yeah. Yeah. There he goes again, Paula. Yeah, there he goes again. And the guy deep under Los Angeles who's here celebrating Halloween, Mr. Penzo.
Magic 8-Ball, should I just not answer the door and eat all the candy myself?
The answer you seek is yes.
There you go.
There you go.
I tend to remember the 8-Ball being super, super amenable last year, wasn't it? Doesn't your 8-Ball say yes? Like, man,
look, this is the preseason. We got to get ready for, got a couple months to go. So
I think that it's really awkward that Len calls his panel van the Halloween candy distribution, you know, location. And that's just really awkward. We put a little light outside the little panel van. Like, here you go, kids. Uncle Len's got candy.
So wrong. Paula, you had something? Or can we actually get this thing started?
All I was going to say was that technically the Magic 8-Ball said that the answer that Len seeks is yes, not that the correct answer is
That's
yes.
That's right.
All right, you're no help, Paula.
That is... That is a valid point. We got Paula here. We got Len here. We got OG here. And Doug, we are about to thrill you with our grisliest Halloween money story. So let's get this. Well, we can't get this party started. We got to do this first. This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? You want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Well, don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment's the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal, rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money's breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money in the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed. Well, as the bell rings on our Halloween festivities, time for your most terrible financial horror story. Does it involve a bank? Does it involve somebody getting ripped off with their money? Does it involve insurance or estate planning? Paula Pam from Afford Anything, scare us with your Halloween tale. What is your Halloween tale called?
Ooh, the tale of... This is going to be super nerdy. The tale of trying to buy disability insurance when you're self-employed. That's probably way too in the weeds. I'm sure, just add
from hell at the end of it, just, and it'll be okay.
I don't know, man. There's a lot of people screaming. The second that you even mentioned disability insurance, people are like, what?
I know. And it's so in the weeds. There's no way that I can like really go into how just want to stab myself in the eyeball with a fork it is, other than you basically get the story just from its headline, and it's a necessary thing to do and simultaneously nothing I would ever recommend. And unfortunately, it's the type of story that if you're like, well, and then I called for an insurance quote, it makes for terrible radio. So it's not even like something you can really tell.
No, that's a horror story all the way around. It's a horror story right for this podcast. It's a horror story for disability coverage. Yes. Nobody wins, Paula.
I know. I'm just spreading negativity everywhere I go.
It's just absolutely horrible. Yeah, but disability insurance, really super important. I mean, you see people that skip on it all the time because when you looked at that, I mean, part of the horror story is that crap's expensive.
Yeah, super expensive. And if you go to buy it as an individual policy, the natural inclination from the people who are selling it is to immediately be suspicious of you. Like, hey, why are you buying this? Right. Right?
Well, you know, it's funny because, and OG, you can opine here on this. My understanding is the reason they're super suspicious of you is because when I've talked to people that work for disability insurance companies, the only people that apply for disability insurance are people who might already have an injury or they're getting ready to fake one.
Well, I don't know about the committing insurance fraud being super rampant, but it's not generally the thing that people go out and search for on their own because it's kind of expensive and we feel pretty invulnerable, right? So generally people don't go out and say, you know what I should do today? Go get some disability insurance.
So
I can see that from an underwriting standpoint.
Do they have insurance where you're looking at the mountains and you're sitting by a nice roaring fire and the colors are just past peak?
Well, the key is to get it before you go skiing so that when you tear your meniscus, you get paid.
Oh, that's a horror story right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
All right. Mr. Penzo, you are up next, my friend. Regale us.
Did I miss Paula? Was there a story there, Paula? Or was
I don't think there was. I think it was just a headline.
Okay. Guilty. All right, well, okay. Let me give you my. Let's see.
This one's got to be better. You got to keep us around the campfire a little bit, Len. Uncle Len.
I'm going to regale you with my first story. Here is Chucky and the Chilling Check from Hell. Okay, and here's what happened. This is one of my daughter's friends, and she was selling some clothing on Poshmark. Have you heard of Poshmark?
It's
this thing that you can, I guess, you know, if you have extra clothes that you want to get rid of, you go onto Poshmark and you can sell it to people and people will buy them from you. It's a way to get rid of some of your extra clothing. Well, it turns out that we'll call her Chucky. Chucky was selling these clothes on Poshmark, and it was for $18. It was I don't know what it was. It was a shirt, I guess, is what my daughter said. But so a lady bought it, and she paid by check, and she mailed the check to Chucky. Well, Chucky got the check in the mail, but the check wasn't for $18. It was for $1,800.
Oh, man.
So do you know where this is going to go? So Chucky contacted the lady and said, there's a mistake here. The shirt that you wanted was $18, not $1,800. And the lady said, not a problem. Why don't you Venmo me the difference between the $1,800 and the $18? So,
Venmo me
$1,700 and what is that? $82. And then you can just cash the check. Okay. When you're young, you don't think about this. These are people in their, late teens, early 20s, and they're trusting. And so she said, okay. Chucky said, okay.
Oh.
She immediately Venmoed the money to the lady. And then, of course, you know what happened. Chucky went to cash the check, and the check was no good. And sadly, Venmo did not reimburse Chucky, and that is a lot of money when you're a young adult. So it was just heartbreaking.
Hell, that'd be a lot of money if it happened to me right now. I mean, that's a bunch of money.
Yeah, but that's a sad and a scary tale.
That is a scary tale, Mr. Pitt. Way better than Paula's. Paula, did you hear that story? That's a real story, Paula.
I mean, I could tell a story about a person I know who got scammed on Craigslist for $3,000.
Was it similar?
It was, well, so I don't know the full details. I know he was trying to buy a car, and I don't know exactly, what the exchange was that led from, hey, I'm looking at a Craigslist post for a car that's for sale. It was $3,000. Here's a post with a car for sale for $3,000. That was like step one. And then step Z was, oh, oops, I'm out $3,000.
We had a similar thing, and we almost got caught by it, Len, which was when we first moved in, we had the spot. We're still looking for a piano. And we found this person who had this beautiful, it's like a baby grand piano, and it cost next to nothing. And the guy even said, when Cheryl contacted him, said, you know what, I'm moving to Maryland with my family. I just, you know how hard it is to get rid of a piano. Why don't you just take it? You just have to pay for the moving cost. And here's the number of who you call for the moving cost. So Cheryl calls this mover, and the mover said, yeah, I will bring it tomorrow from Little Rock, which is like a 2.5 hour drive. And, you know, we had just moved here and it took movers forever to schedule. And this guy was going to move it for us tomorrow. Like, yeah. He's like, yep, I can pick it up. I'm going to move it tomorrow. He goes, but here's the deal. I just need to be paid ahead of time. The guy just needs the money. He's like, yep, I just need $600 right now to move it. And Cheryl's like, so are we going to send him $600? I'm like, no, that's a scam.
Yeah, that's the tell, right? Everybody, especially you young people out there, that is the tell. If somebody's asking you for money out of your pocket when they're promising you something in exchange, and it's just too good to be true, you know that something is probably up. It's the same thing about people will say, oh, you know, you've won this $1,000, but you got to send me $50 before you can get your $1,000. So yeah, there you go.
Yuck. All right, OG, it is time for your tale of Halloween terror.
Well, I have two, but here's the first one. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and weary over a many quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded nearly nappy, suddenly there came a tapping as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, tapping at my chamber door. Only this and nothing more, except it was the IRS calling. And turns out this person was pretty behind on taxes, apparently. Thought that he had paid all of his tax bill. Pretty certain it was paid in full, but boy, this phone call seemed to indicate that that was not the case.
Well, wait a minute. So is this you? Is this a client? Is this yes, someone who shall remain nameless?
It's a client who received a terrible phone call that they had miscalculated their taxes, grossly miscalculated their taxes, and had to remedy that situation post-haste. There was no chance that they could send a check, contact their CPA. None of those things would matter.
Oh.
The only thing you can do right this moment.
I got it.
The FBI is watching you. They're watching right now to see what your next move is. To see what your next move is. And it better be to go to Walgreens and get a whole bunch of Visa gift cards, because that's the only way the IRS gets paid now. We don't take cash or check or wire transfers. You're just going to rattle off these Visa check card numbers to me, and that'll settle the bill. So we're going to need you to go get $10,000 worth. But you can't do it all at one store. They'll think something's up. You know, you probably don't want this public. You probably don't want your neighborhood knowing that you're in hock to the IRS right now. So
this
you should
is
probably
so
go
bad.
To a couple of different CVSs and Walgreens, just kind of spread those out. And, of course, she did.
She did. Oh, no.
Because she didn't want to, you know, the FBI's watching your next move.
Oh,
so,
no.
So, the IRS will never, ever, 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 never, ever call you and tell you you owe money. They will mail you a letter, certified sometimes, or regular postal. They may show up at your house, but they will have badges and guns. And if they show up at your house with a badge and a gun, you're going to jail anyway. So there's nothing you can do to remedy that situation at that point. Like that one's past like solving. That one's past all the letters. You know, they may show up at your office if you're a business owner and say, "Hi, I'm a revenue officer," but they don't show up and go, "Hi, I'm a revenue officer and you must pay me in Visa gift cards today."
I remember.
They might schedule an appointment. So the IRS calls, it's a prank call. Hang the phone up. The FBI is not watching you. I promise.
And they don't want to be paid in gift cards.
They most certainly do not.
They do.
They take check and wire transfer.
Yeah, you've heard this story, OG, about secretaries who are always picking up office gifts, and they get these either emails or calls from people saying, "Hey, we're trying to surprise somebody in the office," and so many will fall prey of this. They're like, "Ooh, there's somebody in the office that I don't know," so they go give them a bunch of gift cards, and then they find out later that the person doesn't even work for the company. They just Scammed them. Ugly stuff. Ugly, ugly stuff. All right. Doug, do you pay your taxes and gift cards?
Taxes?
How about a horror story from you? Do you have one there, Mr. Doug?
You know, just the classic 6 weeks into the new job, time to go buy a new car, right? I mean, I had a perfectly good serviceable car that was probably going to, you know, give me another 20, 30,000 miles on it at least, but nope, had to go get that new sweet Mitsubishi Diamante, the CD changer in the trunk.
Of course, because where else are they going to put the CD changer?
It's so convenient there. Pick the six CDs you want to listen to for the next 800 miles. That's all you get.
Doug, I'm surprised you didn't ask for the manual CD changer, and then when you put it in the back seat, and then now you just pay for the guy to change the CDs, manually.
That's OG with his manservant and his like 28 foot long Mercedes or whatever he has. That's not me. That's not the way I roll. But I actually had a car. This is not part of the financial horror story, but obviously that cost me a ton of money long-term, right? Know that listening to these shows, but, the CD changer story made me realize like just two cars ago. So let's say 6 or 8 years ago or something, I found a CD player in my glove compartment a year and a half after I got the car. Had just, no idea it was in there.
Just realized.
I was still putting CD players in the glove compartment of cars in the 2000s.
Is there any chance that it was the navigation disc?
No, no, I know what you're saying. I had one of those in like the armrest of a GM vehicle once. No, it was... was the full on?
That's the logical thing. Place to put that.
Right, that's where that goes in the art. He knew it couldn't be that because it was in the armrest.
Right. Exactly.
The last car that I bought when I went to take it for a test drive, I looked at the CD player and I looked at the thing and I pointed and I said, "Is that a CD-ROM drive?" And the guy just looked at me and he was like, "In my day, we used to call those CD players." Right.
A CD-ROM drive.
Hey, don't get me started on floppy disks. What were they? The 5 1/4 inch or even the bigger ones? What were those bigger ones? 8 inch.
This
flops.
Isn't a medical show. It's a financial show.
Don't they have a pill for that now? So bad. The horror story that Doug, that you reminded me of, almost a horror story for us, was that I had used, and I've talked about this a lot, about using TrueCar and pitting dealers against each other. And we actually got this great deal on a Volkswagen, and we go to sign the paperwork. And for whatever reason, I couldn't make it to the meeting. And I had been the one that had negotiated. Cheryl goes to sign for the car, and the number on the paperwork, and thank God she caught it, but the number on the paperwork was different than the number the dude had agreed to, which by the way, he said was just a quote, huge mistake. Sorry.
Of course.
Just a mistake. And guess what, Len? It wasn't in our favor.
Well, I was going to say, but you know how honest car dealers are.
I know.
Come on.
It's so great. All right. Those are our Halloween stories. If you're hanging out with us and you've got a tale of financial terror, please feel free to come up on stage. Just hit the microphone button and tell us what you'd like to talk about. And we'd love to hear your story. But while we're waiting, OG, you said you had two of them. So let's go right back to you, man. Tell us a story, Mr. OG.
I don't have a pithy Edgar Allan Poe intro for this one, other than to say that I have enjoyed owning Tesla stock for the last year, give or take. And I like to write call options, which is just a fancy way of saying, pay me today for promising to sell you my stock in the future. And for the entire year, that's worked out for me. And I decided last week I had the Tesla stock had risen quite a bit. And I said, you know, I'm going to sell a call, which means I'm going to get money today at $880 a share. Because it was at 860. If it got to 880, I'm okay with getting out at that price. In exchange for that, I got $15 of cash that day. 100 shares, I made $1,500. Plus, it's got to get to $880 before it goes away. So, turns out Friday came and went, and I was busy, and I looked in my brokerage account today and noticed that Tesla was no longer there. So, therefore, it must have closed above 880. So, I've now been sold out of the stock at 880. my brother, who is very kind and generous, reminded me today to look at Tesla stock price. And today, as I looked at it, was at $1,050. So as a proud shareholder for the better part of a year, and if you owned Tesla for the year, you know that it went up a whole bunch, down a whole bunch, back up, back down, back up. I sold last week on Thursday or Friday at $880 a share. And my
lowly.
That's
because of Hertz. That's because of Hertz said they were going to buy 100,000 of them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, no. I know.
You would have had $140 a share.
Hey, and as an aside, OG, one of these days you're going to have to teach me about options. Just boggle my mind. I mean, I don't understand them at all. And I'd
love
a lesson.
Well, clearly neither do I, Len.
Oh, okay. Well, because you know what? I don't try them because it just seems I can't make heads or tails out of how they work. So
actually, when you think about it, though, yeah. I mean, if your stock's trading in a range and you're okay with being sold out, like what happened to OG, Len, the cool thing about selling a call is you're just letting somebody else ride your share. So in every transaction with an option, there's two people. There's the banker and there's the risk taker, right? And in this one, you're just the banker. So, yep. And the way that
Phil, what's the cost? But there's like a third cost in it, right? It's like $2.40, right? You're buying a, right? Isn't that how it
well,
works?
Well, not really anymore. Most of the transaction costs have been whittled away. I mean, you might pay 65 cents a contract or something, but generally speaking, there's no friction there. You know, the friction happens where you hold a stock for a long time and you miss out by 3 days on the, you know, 15% return.
Okay. Well,
and so that's the risk that you run. You know, when the stock was at $860, let's take any stock that you own right now, Len, and you say, okay, I've got, I can't think of the prices of anything, but let's just say the S&P 500, right? S&P 500 shares, SPY is at, call it 450. Let's just say, for argument's sake, and you say, you know, OG, I'll sell you my S&P shares. They're trading today at 450. I'll sell them to you next Friday at 460. In exchange for that promise, you get paid today because you just made a promise. So you get paid something, maybe $1 a share or $2 a share or something like that. Okay. And it's all based on how volatile the stock is, right? But let's say that the S&P gets to $459, you were at 460. No one's going to buy it from you for 460 when on the open market, you can buy it for 459, right? So your option expires worthless. You keep all the cash. Life goes on.
Wait, how do you lose?
You lose by Hertz announcing that they're going to buy 100,000 Teslas.
Yeah, you lose with it being sold away, like just happened.
Your stock goes to $1,100 a share, and somebody shows up at your door and says here you're going to sell to me for $880.
Oh, I
see.
But
on the market, it's $1,100. They go, yeah, I know that part. That's why I want to buy it from you at $880.
And actually, the good news for OG, Len, is that OG still made money, right? Because he still got the top of his upside. He still made some money, but he lost out on the big money. So once again, the risk taker makes a lot of money. The banker makes a little money. But the banker makes the longer, money on every deal.
And the longer the duration, would it? How does
the more cash you would get.
Yeah, okay, yes. More cash you would get. Okay.
Yep. All right.
Especially if it's close to the price. Yeah, especially if it's close to the price it's trading at today.
That's okay. Right. Well, it still seems, I don't know, maybe you make it sound easy, but boy, for some reason.
it's a binary outcome. It's either you make money or you don't. You know what I mean? Like Joe said, if you're the banker, if you're the person who's selling that to another consumer, another investor, you know, you're guaranteed an outcome. But the loss that you get is, you know, I've made probably $10,000 or $15,000 in income on Tesla stock this year, just selling calls, right? No big deal. But I missed out on $28,000 of profit yesterday. You know, so what did I really gain?
Right,
my gain is I lost $13,000.
How many times though? How many times did you were you able to write a call before it got sold away though, OG?
I've been doing it all year.
Yeah. So you actually, you know, I mean, you've got all that money you pocketed. So that would come off the money you lost today
off or the cost
in the last
basis.
Couple of days. Yeah. Hey, I know there's a certain segment of our audience right now that's just sitting here going, I have no idea what's going on. And they're thinking,
can you just get to the trivia? Because that's the fun part.
Yeah. Can I kick somebody's trivia?
All right. It's that time. Boys and girls, time for our trivia challenge. Our three contributors are in the middle of a fight to the death. We'll call it a fight to the death because it's 2 days before Halloween. So we'll run with that. The score as of right now is Mr. Penzo with 15. OG has 14 and Paula has 11.
There's a chance. So you're saying there's a chance.
I take a few weeks off and all of a sudden I go from first place to second. What the heck?
Well, the good news is Doc G filled in for you. And that dude.
Yeah. Apparently it's not very great news.
No, that dude is a pro at trivia in the most unpro kind of way. What was his guess? Well, everybody's going to hear that one next week. So, cause we kind of flip these around, but wow. It was interesting. But speaking of interesting, I think Doug's got some cool, Halloweeny trivia. So Doug, you ready?
Yeah, let's go. Hey there, stackers. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I've got my popcorn and dots all ready for my scary movies this Halloween. Yes, I eat those together at the same time, and you should too. While your average stacker fears a 24.5% interest rate on a store credit card, you know what really freaks me out? The Blair Witch Project, which, in my opinion, is the scariest movie in history. Here's a fact for all you cinephiles. The teeth Heather found in the twigs at the end of the Blair Witch Project, those were real human teeth. Fun fact, the production team got those from Len's dentist. Speaking of the dentist, they're all high-fiving themselves this weekend because there's a real boost to their finances coming from all the candy these little delivery monsters are bringing home for their parents. Which makes me wonder, what year was the first toothbrush, as we know it, first mass-produced? I'll be back just as soon as I can get these damn dots out of my teeth.
That's why I don't go there. I can't. Cheryl's always like, you want dots? Nope, I'll pass. Hard pass. Mr. Penzo, you're up first.
Yeah.
Mass-produced toothbrush.
Let the record show, I have no cavities. In my old as I am, I have no cavities, none.
Boy, and
couldn't have been my teeth.
I thought OG was bragging earlier, but that sounds like a big old brag.
All right, let's see. Toothbrush, mass-produced is the key words, I think, there. So, something tells me they weren't probably, let's see. I think hygiene like that is relatively new. I really do. So, I'm going to say maybe right sometime between World War I and World War II. I'll say 1937.
1937. What are you thinking about that, OG? What's the laugh about?
I'm just still thinking back to Len saying I have no cavities, and I pictured that's what he said when he went to jail for the first time. It's all like, I'm sorry. It was just a funny phrase. I have no cavities.
You mean when they're checking his cavities?
I had to think about that for a second.
Cavity search.
Cavity search. Cavity search.
I have no cavities.
Even Paula got that one before I did. I'm the last guy in that joke. Sorry. I'm like, where's that? All right, OG, what are you thinking?
I was thinking, mass produced is the key word there. So I'm with Len on that. I believe that they were still ripping teeth out with pliers and stuff during the Civil War. So I'm going to go post Civil War, but,
what kind of toothbrush are you doing when you're ripping your teeth out?
That's what I mean. Exactly. Not very good.
Oh, I see what you mean.
You know, that's what I'm saying. So I'm saying it's after that. And, but I'm going to go, this sounds like something like Procter & Gamble that's been around a really long time, or Johnson & Johnson's been around a long time, started selling, it seems like a pretty easy thing to sell. You just get a piece of wood and I don't know what you'd make brush out of, but something, and sell it. So I'm going to go a little earlier than Len. I'm going to say, 1897.
All right, Paula.
Oh, no. All right. So, Len, your answer was 1937?
Yes.
And OG, yours is 1897.
Got 40 years between them. You got a nice bit of room between them as well.
Len, your answer was 1937, which means my answer is either going to be 1938 or 1937.
Oh, my goodness.
Which one is it going to be?
Speaking of Halloween.
Yeah, Joe, this is when we need filler music.
Here we go.
Filler, there's a dental pun in there, isn't there?
There it is.
I am going to go with 1936.
Now, oh, she takes the middle. 1936. Yeah. So we'd love to tell you which one of you three is right. Man, we're coming down to the last couple months after this one, but we don't play that way. We'll be right back. Well, you know what I think about Navy Federal? I think about the veterans that have done so much for our country. And I also think about some of our active service members. Want to say a special shout out to my nephews, Colin and Nathan, who are both in the Navy. Colin is stationed outside Seattle, Washington, on a submarine, and my nephew Nathan is in South Africa as an air traffic controller. And in Military Appreciation Month, Navy Federal Credit Union wants you also to celebrate members, many of whom go above and beyond. Navy Federal offers member-only exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to empower their members and help them reach their goals. It's all branches of the military, veterans, DOD employees, and their family are eligible for Navy Federal membership. They offer 24/7 help from their U.S.-based member service. Visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate to see all of their Military Appreciation Month offers and other Navy Federal offers. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. Len, you kicked this off with 1937, and you've got everything more recent than that because nobody went later.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. You know, mass produced. That is the key. Mass produced. You know, but it is kind of weird because you think, well, gee, electricity was around before the toothbrush. I mean, think about that. So maybe that's not a good idea, but we'll see.
I don't know. Oh, gee, you got everything below 1897. So,
yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. Toothbrush, I think people have been brushing their teeth a long time, but I'm with Len. The key word is mass produced. So I don't know. Industrial age. That's what I'm going to go with.
Paul, you go around bragging about no cavities like Len?
Oh, no, I got a mouthful of cavities.
It's like, well, thank you.
Yeah, it is. I'm horrifying every dentist and orthodontist who's listening to this.
You're called moneymaker when they come in.
Yeah, I don't think they're bothered right by that one bit.
No. So Paula, you got the middle 40 though. That's pretty good. Well, at least the middle 20, I suppose.
Yeah, I've got a very narrow range, so I really took a gamble.
Hey, you put yourself there, so no complaint about it now.
No, got to be a risk taker. Banker versus risk taker, right?
Well, that's right. Nice. Good recall. All right, Doug, let's see who's our winner.
Hey there, stackers. I'm respected mortician, candy hoarder, and beauty school dropout, Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. I'm sure you're ready to get your candy on, but don't forget, one of the best ways to save money is to take care of your teeth. Since 3000 BC, ancient humans have been using a chew stick, which is a thin twig with a frayed end to rub against their teeth, a technology which Len still uses today. However, the first bristle brush was invented in China in 1498 using stiff, coarse hairs taken from the back of a hog's neck and attached to handles made of bone or bamboo. But the modern toothbrush as we know it today was not mass-produced until 1780, proving Paula really sucks at this Chelsea Brennan thing. Oh, gee, you're our winner. And Len, take a hint. It is not too early to give some new technology a shot.
Oh my goodness. OG's back in the house.
The guy was off by more than 100 years and he wins.
He still won. We're all pretty skilled at our toothbrushing.
Wow.
Nice job, OG. And the plot thickens. Paula, that was absolutely.
I know. The creature to be most scared of.
But none of us are giving Len a hard time for picking 1937. It was just how awful Paula's guess was. But Len, I also like you need to be ashamed of yourself.
World War I and World War II.
He's pretty much on
date in 1937. Yeah, you're on World War II.
In retrospect, that was a stupid. Like I said, electricity was invented before the toothbrush. No, that's
Len's problems. Like, I've been that to England. Dumb. They still don't have mass produced toothbrushes there.
People in the UK, send your hate mail to Doug.
Yeah, there goes the UK market.
Hey, you know what? I forgot to tell you guys. I forgot to tell you guys something very important. Second half of the show is brought to you by Magnify Money. When you had to stacking Benjamins, did everybody lean in?
I sure did.
You totally wonder what it was. When you head to stackingbenjamins.com/magnify money, Doug, you know what happens?
They send a team of 200 people over to get all the leaves out of your yard.
Very, very close. You actually find out that those brick and mortar products using at your bank, horrifying. Speaking of Halloween, just absolutely horrifying, because 92% of all the things from online banks all rated against each other at Magnify Money. Head to stackybenjamins.com/magnify money for more. But wait a minute. She has had almost 30 minutes to redeem herself. So let's see if she can do it. see if she's
she's just going to say another scary word.
She's Googling financial horror stories.
Paula, here's your theme music.
I mean, to piggyback off of selling a stock at a price that you later regret, I could simply tell a story in one sentence, which is, I sold Peloton in March 2020.
Oh.
Right at the start of the pandemic, I sold away all of my Peloton stock at the beginning of the pandemic because everyone said 2 weeks to stop the spread. So I was like, why are all these idiots buying bikes? We're only going to be in shutdown for 2 weeks. After that, everything's going to go to normal. So
and everybody else goes,
right? So yeah, it was, I sold it with a gain, but absolutely nothing like what would have happened if I had just held on to it for another 6 months.
Okay. But here's the question. So if this is a financial horror story, I mean, clearly the outcome wasn't what you wanted, but what was wrong in your methodology?
Well, you know, honestly, I think the story just illustrates like loss aversion, right? Like when you're so aware of what could have been, that there's the emotional impact of the opportunity cost. It's not actually a problem. I mean, at the end of the day, I still made money. So who cares? That's the opposite of a horror story. It's a celebratory story. It's a New Year story. But I think it goes to show that our feelings about money are not objective. Objectively, I made money. Subjectively, I see the glass as half empty.
Yeah. Which makes it hard. I mean, playing Monday morning quarterback, as they call it, is a difficult game and one that you really shouldn't embark on, because I think you kind of learn the wrong lessons.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes you create a narrative to retroactively fit what you hope the lesson might be.
So looking at the chart, Peloton was probably trading somewhere in the $25 range when you sold it.
I don't remember specifically, but that sounds...
And today it's trading for $96.60. It was trading over $160 at the beginning of this year. So, yeah, that'll give you some heartburn.
Yeah, man.
That's okay. Hey, Paul, if it make you feel any better, I put some money on a Flyer mining stock a while back. It doubled. Within 2 months, the price, it doubled. And I just kept... Instead of selling it, I thought this thing was going to go more than double. My exit strategy was triple. So it started dropping and it kept dropping and it kept dropping. And I'm still holding it, and it is now underwater by quite a bit. So there, maybe that makes you feel better. I went from a double to underwater.
I'm going to make you feel worse, because I bought Peloton at the IPO and sold it at 120.
Wow.
So
there's some salt in that wound, Paula.
It was like 20. I think, what did IPO at, Paula? Do you remember? Like 20, 25-ish?
Yeah.
But then it went down a whole bunch. It went down to like 12. So same deal. And I just got lucky. But I'm convinced, you know, talking about all these individual stock purchases and stuff like that, and you can kind of translate this into, you know, crypto. And there was some stuff over the last weekend where some of the meme coins went up a little bit, and everybody gets out their calculator, right? And goes, well, if I would have put $1,000 in, you know, this thing, I would have 8.83 billion today. But in reality, right? In reality, do you ever stand a chance of that happening? I mean, logically, I have $1,000 in Dogecoin, $1,000 in Shibubu or whatever it's called. And unless I forget about it and wake up one day and it's worth 5 million, there's no chance I would see it reach 5 million.
Yeah, this
because
is
because like, at some number along the way, right? You go like, well, I had 1,000, not 10 grand. It's like, dude, I'm out. Like, I just 10X my money. Or you wake up and you got like 100,000, or God forbid, 500,000 or a million. Like, I would never see $100 million of Dogecoin unless I went into a coma and forgot about Coinbase.
Yeah, I think a number that you were talking about was if you had $1,000 in January, wouldn't it be like $200 million now or something like that?
Some obnoxious number, but you would have to have forgotten about it.
But
because no logical person, and the same thing with your stock, Len or Paula, you know, you're frustrated because you only made double, or well, in Len's case, lost his ass. But
well, I haven't lost anything because I haven't sold it yet, right?
Ah, there you go. Oh, look at you with the fancy terminology.
He can write it all the way down.
Hey, I paid a therapist good money for that. So
it's a paper loss. Well, when the Congress passes their capital gains tax, you can be like, can I get a capital loss on this one? Can I write this one off?
Right.
You know.
But hold on. Let me ask this question, OG, because I've been having, since you and I had this very conversation that you just brought up now, I've had this conversation with a lot of people. Like, let's say that it was $1,000 in January. Let's say it went up to $200 million. At what point, realistically, would you have gotten off the train? Would you have sold your stuff because you're like, holy crap, this is a lot of money? And it's funny, the more I have this conversation, the smaller that number is. Literally 2 hours ago, I brought up this scenario, OG, to a friend, and I think it'd be somewhere between $50,000 and $100,000. I'd be like, man, I'm done. This is fantastic. I might have left my original capital in it or maybe a few bucks. But Len, how about you? If you put $1,000 into Shibubu coin or whatever coin and it went to $200 million, at what point would you have gone, this is too much money and I got to sell now?
Well, I would have an exit strategy, right? I would set it ahead of time. Heck, I don't know what I would say. Maybe it depends what you think, where you think it's going
to
be.
But let's say it goes to 50. You put $1,000 in it and it goes to 50,000 bucks. You're telling me that you're still hanging on?
I would have pulled. No, I would have pulled.
I know. Me too.
Let me give you a good horror story. I'm going to
deep. Oh, time for.
Hold on. Because we're talking about, it's related to what we're talking about. So it's the story of Laszlo Hanyich. Have you guys heard of him?
No, but I got to play your theme music for this.
This is true. This is not, this isn't a Len being smart or anything. This is a true story. This is Laszlo Hanyich. I believe he was a software engineer, one of the first people into Bitcoin. And this is, you can look it up. He had at one time when this thing was first getting going, when Bitcoin was first getting going, he had 100,000 Bitcoin. Okay, and he spent it all on pizza. If he would have kept all of that Bitcoin, that'd be worth, I don't know what's 100,000 times whatever it is right now, $6 billion, $6.5 billion.
We did this trivia, didn't we, Doug? I think and Pauletta Ryder is here in the audience
Yeah,
we did trivia on this, Len. This is horrible. I think Doug said during the trivia, Doug, didn't you say you hope that he got extra toppings?
Yeah.
But can't you say that's for, I mean, obviously that's just an insanely extreme example, but this is also true for just about anything. Any purchase that you make is taking tomorrow's future potential and consuming it today. You know, and whether it's as grotesque as I should have had $6 billion of Bitcoin, or it's like, you know, I should have 10X my money. I mean, the S&P's up 11 times since 30 years ago. And to get all 11X of that return, you had to invest the money in October of 1991 and then do nothing. And you 11X your money. But along the way,
invest your dividends.
Yeah, that too. But dividends are up 6X and inflation's only up 2X. So, you know, that's gone up too. But all you had to do was just do that. And yet time after time, you know, so it's that struggle between do I need / want it now versus what's the opportunity in the future?
Yeah.
Because this multiple exists for everything else. And it's not, 100,000x return type thing, but it's 10x or 11x. And, it doesn't take very many 30-year increments in your life and your family's life to turn, $100,000 into 100 million. It happens in a generation and a half if you just let it do it. That's the key.
That's hard, though. The volatility, that's the thing. The volatility can really shake you,
100%. Yeah. To get 11 times return in the S&P over the last 30 years, you had to damn near be in a coma because there was so much stuff that went wrong along the way. So many ends of the earth, this is the end of the earth. This is it. We're kaput after this. And all you had to do is just hang out. And it's very difficult in the moment.
So is that to say that, in keeping with the Halloween theme, the thing to be most scared of, the creature to be most scared of, is ourselves?
Ooh. Absolutely. Paula, you can't tell a story, but you sure can bring the hammer home.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'm very acquainted with self-sabotage.
She's like, I'm a master at that part of this thing. And speaking of more, Len, was that actually your story, or do you?
No, I had another one.
You
just
do have one? Yes.
I have one more.
I think yours is the one that ends this thing, man. So bring it.
I don't know about that. Well, okay. So this was, it's kind of the backside of
water.
The story that, that OG told. And I'm calling this the tale of the CPA from hell. And what this is, my mother-in-law and her hubby, this was 15 years ago, they had their taxes filled out, and they went to the tax preparer. And this tax preparer was known for supposedly for giving you maximizing your returns. I mean, more than any normal tax preparer they went to. So they went to this tax preparer, and they got a tremendous refund. Well, about 18 months later, you got a letter from the IRS, not a phone call, OG, a letter from the IRS. And they were told basically that there was something wrong with their tax return. There was things that weren't lining up. And she asked me for help to her tax return to see what it was. I looked at that tax return, and you could tell it wasn't filled out by anybody remotely who's a tax preparer at all. I mean, it was so amateurish, and it was clear that they ended up owing probably, I forget, it was close to $10,000 that they had to come up with
because of
this tax prepare. And just for your information, if you go to the IRS website, I guess this isn't very uncommon. There are a lot of phony tax preparers out there. And that what they say is, you need to avoid preparers who base their fee on a percent, usually on a percentage of the amount of the refund. If somebody's doing that, that's a big red flag. And I think that's what my mother-in-law ended up doing. That's how what brought her in.
Think about how enticing that is, Len. Hey, if I get you more, we both make more.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but that's a red flag right there.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, that's a huge red flag. Okay. So please, make sure that you have a qualified tax preparer. Don't just take anybody who's promising you huge returns.
Second clue is if they do it in crayon, if they're filling out your stuff in crayon.
Seriously, I went and I looked at the return. The return
was a pen I could borrow.
The return was so amateurish. I mean, it was, when I looked at it, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. And here's the other thing you got to learn. They signed it. They have to sign their name. And you can't fall back on, well, somebody else filled out my return. You signed that return. Therefore, you are responsible for that return. So keep that in mind. That doesn't, excuse you from what your tax preparer does.
That's a good horror story avoided, Mr. Penzo, and that's a great place to leave it. Yes.
All 11 of them.
Right. Well, it's time, guys. This has been a fantastic Halloween episode, but let's see what's going on where you live. OG, you are going to be gallivanting The Hills Are Alive with the sound of OG.
The Hills Are Alive. Yes. This is just for this week. I will be back in the great state of Texas by Thursday, before anybody listens to this. And
the warrant will be expired by then.
Yeah. The heat died down by Thursday. So just a little misdemeanor, Len, chill. A little after school activity this weekend, and then Halloween, you know. So my youngest, she's a unicorn princess.
Takes after her dad.
That's right. The glow in the dark unicorn. And I don't know what the boys are going to do. I think the boys are a little too old, so we'll see. Should be fun.
Well, thanks for the update. What do you guys have for lunch today? No, I'm just Len, what's going on at lenpenzo.com?
Let's see. Hey, we look at why gold and silver are the superheroes of wealth preservation. Yes, I knew you'd get something you never would expect at lenpenzo.com, but
shocker.
I'm going out on a limb this week.
So crazy. Off brand. Going off brand. Paula Pant.
Mm-hmm. On the Afford Anything podcast, speaking of scary, we talked to a guy who, his name is Marshall Allen. He wrote a book called Never Pay the First Bill, and it's about your medical bills.
It's about your credit card statement.
Yeah, it's about the letter that the IRS sends you.
Yeah. It's never worked for him, but it might work for you.
So it's all about medical billing, hospital billing. It sort of demystifies that complicated world and talks about how to understand the medical billing system and how to work with it to try to negotiate some kind of lower bill.
Wow, that's fantastic. And you know what? Not enough people ask questions about their medical bill, so that's timely as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, good stuff. All right. That's going to do it for today. Thanks, everybody here on Fireside, for hanging out with us. You'll hear this on Friday in our feed at the Stacky Benjamin Show. And Doug, you got it from here now, man. What should we have learned here on our Halloween episode?
Well, Joe, first, learn from your past scary stories to make sure you prevent any future financial horrors. Taking the right steps, sticking to a plan, and having patience can turn your nightmare into your dream life. Second, if someone writes you a check for too much money, just keep the check and don't give them a dime back. If they don't know the difference between $18 and $1,800, that's on them. They got to learn about decimals from somebody, right? But the big lesson? If you're just throwing out that extra neck hair from the wild boar you had for dinner, you could be using those to make yourself a perfectly serviceable toothbrush. It's called frugality, people. Haven't you spent any time in an online FIRE financial forum? Commercial toothbrushes are for sheeple. Thanks to Paula Pant for joining us today. You'll find her podcast, Afford Anything, wherever you're listening to us today.
And by the way, Doug, Paula's stories on Afford Anything longer than her Halloween stories. So just a little known fact.
So you're getting more bang for your buck.
You actually do. You'll get a full hour from Paula instead of like three sentences as a story.
Sign me up.
I'm concise. I'm concise.
Can I keep going here?
All right.
Thanks also to Len Penzo for joining us. As soon as you're done here, go check out lenpenzo.com/wooden teeth, the hilarious site for semi-responsible people. Today's show was written by the brilliant Paulette Perhatch. Know how I know she's brilliant? She wrote the words I'm reading right now. While she's not putting awesome words in my mouth, she helps writers power their work and businesses power their words. See how she can help you at thatwriterpaulette.com.
Welcome to the after show. Man, was that fun. That was a great time, guys. But I think what we need to do now, I think we should each share like our favorite horror movie. So people go home and they've got five different ones. How about that? That they maybe can check out. And Doug, you want to go first? What's your, what's
You know, I'm happy to go first. I just don't know if my favorite scary movie is a horror movie.
Oh,
mine is Seven.
Oh yeah. Cheryl loves that movie.
That was the movie that it drew me in so much. I completely forgot about, you know, that fact that I was watching a movie. I wasn't like analyzing, oh, that would never happen. I was just, it pulled me in so well that I hold that as the standard for really any genre of, if you're really good, I'm going to just forget about everything. And I am just 100% in the story.
Is that where they're chasing a serial killer?
Yeah. Yeah. And it was Seven Deadly Sins,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That was his theme.
Edge of your seat the entire time. That's
what's
a good one.
What's in the box?
Oh, yeah. Paula, how about you?
I was about to say the premise of your question is that I've seen a movie. That's a generous assumption.
The scariest thing for me is asking to say what my favorite movie is.
I know, right? I would say The Ring.
Oh. Oh, my God. When the phone rings, right?
No, there's
that's a different one. That's not the
you're
one
you're thinking of the IRS. Once again.
Those wing pops you get.
So
I just remember the wing, like the ring was something about a bottom of a well. Like
yes. I won't give too much away, but it relates to the bottom of a well.
Yeah. I thought there was one. What's the one where, and I thought there was a ring also where like the phone rings and if you answer it, then you're going to die.
Oh, I don't, if that is part of it, I don't remember it. I do remember something about something coming out of a television set.
Yeah. I remember that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a few years since I've seen it, but I just remember being really creeped out by it.
Yeah. That's a tough one. OG, how about you, man?
Oh, I'm the, loser here that doesn't watch horror movies ever. So
not at all.
Sorry. I mean, I've seen Seven. Pretty scary.
But yeah, you had to have one that set you off. Was there one that you saw and you went, yeah, I'm not doing this again?
No.
No?
No, I have no memories of any. I mean, I saw Seven. I don't know what The Ring is. I never saw like The Quiet Place, which I know a lot of people liked. Never saw it. You know, I did, I don't know if that's a horror movie as it is more of just a thriller. You know, a lot of the Stephen King ones I did see, right? Like it's the one where she breaks his legs again. Misery.
Misery.
I call that a horror movie.
That one's pretty jacked up. But that's really the only one that I remember.
What about, I don't want to steal anything from Len possibly. So, but I bet you, you've seen scary movies that you're not thinking of right now.
I don't know.
Mr. Penso, how about you?
Well, I'd be surprised, Doug, if you stole my thunder here, but maybe not. So I like comedy horror movies. I mean, they take that line between comedy and horror. The
like
first
Scream, one, Scream 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, I guess that would. Yeah, those are okay. But those are my favorite. An American Werewolf in London.
Oh, is, God, you are old.
Yeah, well, I'm the old guy. But I'm going to go even early, further back.
Early when I was John Landis.
Yes, that's true. That's
American
correct.
Psycho. I saw American Psycho. Does that count?
Isn't
that the one with Christian Bale?
Yeah,
like,
he's a psychopath.
Gets pretty wicked.
Yeah. Yeah, not a horror flick. Is it more is just a deranged
scary dude flick?
Dude, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I was going to go back even further back into the '60s when I was a little kid. I remember this movie used to scare me, although it was a comedy horror. It was both. It was a comedy horror. The Ghost and Mr. Chicken with Don Knotts.
Wow. Ghost and Mr. Chicken.
Look it up, people. It's an oldie.
Never heard of that one.
Yeah. Well, you know what happened at the end?
Little Shop of Horrors. Yeah.
At the end, they had to choke it. So,
I knew it. I knew it. I thought, no, I can't say that. Joe would be mad at me if I said that. So I'm just going to leave that joke alone. And then he says it.
What joke? Just the movie.
I would agree though, Len. American Werewolf in London, really, that made an impression. That was sort of early, because it wasn't, CGI, but like, you know, special effects with as he became the werewolf. Well,
the werewolf, that was really time, serious. It was for the time. It was really something else.
That was hardcore. But I thought, I thought for sure you would have said, like, if I had reminded you, you'd seen The Exorcist. Like, that one often gets held up as the pinnacle, a little
before my time.
I mean, they re-released it recently. It's still thought of as being one of the classic scariest of all time. And it really holds.
I'm sure that I saw it sometime before, like when I was a teenager, but I I don't remember much about it.
It's,
if at all.
To your point, Len, I saw a comedy horror movie just last week. Friends of ours invited us over to see Tucker and Dale versus Evil. Have you guys seen this thing? This is a story of these two redneck dudes who get a place in the mountains of West Virginia, and it's where they're going for their holiday. And there's a bunch of college kids, and there's a big misunderstanding. And the writing of the show is, what if you took the traditional quote bad guys, which would be these two dudes, and you told the story from their point of view, and these guys are doing nothing wrong, and these college kids are continually thinking that they're evil, and the college kids keep dying, but they're bringing it on themselves to the point that the two rednecks are like, I think these college kids have a suicide pact, like they're.
What's the movie? I'm going to watch that.
It's called Tucker and Dale versus Evil. And it's very, very funny and irreverent. And it got an 85% on Rotten Tomatoes. I mean, you don't see that from comedies, but also from most horror movies. But back to The Exorcist, I think that it's funny that you mentioned The Exorcist, Doug, because actually Exorcist 3, because the interesting story about The Exorcist, the way it was told to me is that the first Exorcist, of course, came out, was a classic. They went to Peter Blatty, they went to the team that made the first Exorcist and said, hey, this is the 70s and it's the time when they do lots of sequels. And they said, hey, we want to do a sequel to The Exorcist. And they said, there's nothing else to tell. Like, that's the story. It stands on its own. And so Universal came out with Exorcist 2, which you'll see gets just absolutely horrible reviews, just rotten reviews. But then, which is why nobody saw Exorcist 3, but Exorcist 3, my understanding is the original team that made The Exorcist getting just peeved, so angry that they, you know, with Exorcist 2 just did in the franchise. They went back to Universal and said, okay, if you want a sequel, this is the sequel we would have made. And it stars, I don't know if anybody has seen it, but it stars George C. Scott. And there's a serial killer, and man, that movie's scary.
Do you need to see Exorcist 2 in order to?
No, it's a complete non sequitur.
Okay.
It is a complete. Yeah. Exorcist 3 stands up completely as a separate movie on its own.
So I'm just looking it up. It's 1990. I thought it was pretty recent, and I had heard the story about them feeling like they needed to right a wrong. But George C. Scott is the only name I recognize in it.
And like everything else, George C. Scott's fantastic in that. So Exorcist 3 is that movie you think would stink because it's got the 3 on the end. It's not bad, but Tucker and Dale versus Evil also.
How about Prisoners? Did you ever see that?
Never heard of it.
OG's still searching for one that might be scary.
Again, more of a thriller versus than a scary movie.
Yeah.
Everybody's over for Thanksgiving. Dude's daughter goes missing.
No.
They're pretty sure they know it was the creepy neighbor down the street. So cops don't want to do anything about it. So he kind of takes that into his own hands.
Oh, and which is why OG watched it.
I'm just reading up on this Exorcist 3. It says here It says the film Exorcist 3 became a focal point of the trial of the serial killer Jeffrey Dahmer. Detectives testified Dahmer claimed to identify with the Gemini killer and would play the film for some of his victims before killing
them. Oh.
Thanks, Len.
That made it creepy.
Yeah.
Okay, now I'm definitely watching this.
Well, Stackers, the show might be over, but the celebrations are just beginning because it is Military Appreciation Month, that I want to celebrate people like my brother-in-law, Eric, who is such a giving person. Eric will do just anything for you. And as a Marine, you can see that his time in the military taught him to be a guy who gives to his community, gives to his family, and is always there when you need them. This Military Appreciation Month, Navy Federal Credit Union wants to celebrate members like Eric who go above and beyond. Navy Federal offers member-only exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to empower their members and help them reach their goals. Navy Federal's employees are part of the community they serve. Many of them are military family members, reservists, or veterans. And all branches of the military, veterans, DOD, employees, and their families are eligible for Navy Federal membership. In fact, there are so many resources on the Navy Federal website. Resources like Best Cities After Service to help veterans transition to civilian life, and Best Careers for Military Spouses to support military families. Visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate, and you'll see all of their Military Appreciation Month offers and other Navy Federal offers. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.